training camp is underway, and that means we've got takeaways from Arizona, and ha-ha, my beloved Raiders cannot wait for that. Plus, news and notes across the league. How concerned should we be about a slow start in Chicago? We'll give you the actual information you need to know. It's time for Inside Coverage right now. Welcome to Inside Coverage. You know the deal. It's the how and why behind everything going on in the NFL. He's Charles Robinson. He's Frank Schwab. I am Jason Fitz. We got a lot we're going to get into. We got some Hall of Fame talk to get into because the Hall of Fame game is actually weirdly right around the corner. And C-Rob is in a hotel room, which means it must be training camp time. First and foremost, C-Rob, we racking up the miles. Like by the time you get to the end of training camp, are you like, do you get personalized notes from the hotel thanking you because you've gone to so many of these things? Like, are we living a life of luxury out there now?
I don't know if it's life of luxury. I'm in a Glendale Spring Hill Suites right now. I'm going to be careful here. I don't want to say disparaging things about, shaking out the covers before you sleep at night to make sure there's nothing in there. But, it is what it is. I will have had how many days of hotel scrambled eggs will this be for me? it's a couple weeks. By the end of it, it'll be like 5 weeks of hotel scrambled eggs. So
it's always amazing when you do a bunch of hotel life and you realize that some places have real scrambled eggs and some places have dehydrated powdered scrambled eggs.
Yeah, it's not the real deal.
Yeah, you know the difference. The minute you walk up, that's how you know things are good. I'm just trying to delay the inevitable because C-Rob got to see the cluster you-know-what known as my beloved Raiders. Like the annual tradition like no other. You can rely on death. You can rely on taxes. You know, you can rely on weird player things happening during training camp every single year in Vegas. Like it just happens. So Christian Wilkins last week was unceremoniously released from the team. Injury settlement. It's very controversial. What's the latest vibe around what's happening in Vegas with Christian Wilkins, C-Rob?
Yeah, it was pretty clear. So I was driving in when this all happened, when he was released. And, I think to the wider league, it was a surprise because no one had understood that the Raiders had voided his guarantees a month earlier or that he, had not properly healed from this Jones fracture at this point. Although there was clearly some indication heading into camp that he was not going to be practicing. So it was sort of like, okay, he's had a long time to deal with this Jones fracture. Why is this lingering? What are the problems here? And ultimately ends up in Wilkins getting his released. And the gist of it is there's really two things here. Number one, it was clear to me talking to people in the organization and Pete Carroll put words to this, head coach Pete Carroll put some words to this as well, that they did not believe that Wilkins had created any kind of a path to returning to play football. And that just with this new regime between general manager John Spytek and Carroll, it's a non-starter. If you're not going to show up, you're not going to be able to play, and you're not showing the inclination to get yourself on a track to getting back on the football field, they're not going to stick around with the decision they didn't make, which is signing Christian Wilkins. And that was made pretty clear to me, talking to people in the organization. Hey, he has not played a snap for the new regime here. So that's number one. There's no tolerance here. If you're not on board, you're not going to be around. And I think they mean that in almost any respect. They're not going to drag around mistakes. But number two that I think is interesting here is, when you're withholding guarantees or you're canceling out guarantees in a contract, you really have to do that through detrimental to the team. And you have to then, of course, it's going to be attacked by the NFLPA, the players union. They're going to appeal it. And you have to show what is the conduct detrimental. So the question arises, is it Christian Wilkins saying, I got a second opinion here about needing a surgery. I've been told I don't need a surgery. And the team disagreeing, is that enough for conduct detrimental? Or does it have to be something else? And I think that's the underlying question here is, what are the Raiders going to argue in terms of conduct detrimental? Because it just getting a second opinion on his foot from a medical standpoint may not be enough to ultimately void the guarantees that were remaining in his contract.
I think this is fascinating from that standpoint of – if you're a guy with guaranteed money, a lot of guaranteed money like Christian Wilkins, And you say, no, I don't want to get surgery.
Right.
And the team says, you have to get surgery or we're voiding $48 million in guarantees. That seems really weird to me. That seems bad. That seems like a terrible precedent. So I wonder, I'll ask you, do you think the Raiders have anything to stand on here? Like, I don't. Like, I look at this just on the surface and say, if this is just about, hey, I got a second opinion, I don't think I need surgery, I can work through this. And the team is like, if you don't get surgery, we're taking all of your guaranteed money away. Like, I mean, just medically, it's like, you can't force a guy to have surgery, can you? Like, that just seems really like a precedent that the league doesn't want to. I mean, I'm sure the league would like it. The Players Association doesn't want that.
Right. I mean, I think you have a point. Like, first and foremost, we don't know if the Raiders are showing all their cards here. You know, there could be other things, other incidents behind closed doors or inside the locker room or elsewhere that ultimately they are going to roll forward as the reason why they think it illustrates conduct detrimental. You know, I think you're going to have a hard time arguing this, but there's also the pathway where you could say, look, the conduct detrimental for us is once we said we believe you need to have a second surgery here to get this fixed, and you said, no, I have a second opinion or a third opinion or however many opinions, I don't need surgery, then what is your plan to once again return and play for the Las Vegas Raiders? And if you're refusing to give us a plan or there's some sort of lack of communication here, you know, from the Raiders standpoint, are you reaching out and saying, okay, you don't want this surgery? You tell us how you're getting back on the field for us. You tell us when you're going to get in here. What part of our program are you going to be taking part in? What's the timeline here? And you're not getting communication on the other end of this. Then I think, again, I think it's an uphill climb here. You could argue, hey, look, we need to know, when are we going to have this football player who we're paying, you know, tens of millions of dollars back on the field, and there's no communication from their end. Again, I think that's an uphill battle because you're going to argue over whether the Raiders are essentially putting pressure on to have the surgery or not. It's, you know, the grievance is going to be interesting, but the bottom line is pretty clear. The Raiders are like, look, one way or another, whether we get that money back or not, whether we continue to withhold those guarantees or not, players are not going to be here. If we feel like they are not on board with us and they're not going to be in here playing, practicing, you know, getting with the program, we have no problem moving on from those guys.
It's a heck of an expensive statement, I'll tell you that. Real quick, Charles, can you remember anything like this before? Because I couldn't. I was thinking about, you know, there's been guys who get guarantees voided over legal issues, right? You got in trouble with the law, we're taking back your guarantees. That has happened. I can't remember something like this where there's been kind of there's a medical issue and we're taking your guarantees away because you don't agree with our treatment plan, basically. I can't remember anything like that, ever.
Well, if that's the case, I mean, again, I think there's still some nuance that's lacking here because of
all the
parties are keeping a lot of the details surrounding this, you know, locked down. And I think it'll define itself as we move forward, and especially once we get into the grievance hearing. But no, I mean, I can't
but
remember.
But even any type of voiding guarantee, especially to this level, maybe there's been lower level, we forget, but this is tens of millions of dollars. I mean, remember other legal issues this really happening.
Doesn't there have to be some confidence within the organization to go down this path? I mean, like, I know John Spytek is a new GM, but Pete Carroll is not new to football, right? So they've got to have some, like, that's one of the shocking things to me. If this was an all-new regime that had never run a football team, then you'd say, okay, maybe they're just trying to create new precedent, and that's one thing, but that's not what they're doing. And then, C-Rob, the fact that, as you mentioned, these guarantees were negated a month ago, and nobody heard about it. And now we hear, you know, Josina Anderson, this is her tweet. Some league sources believe an incident involving a teammate may have factored in part into the Raiders' fatigue and release of Christian Wilkins, that he was playing around. But now there's all sorts of rumors that there was some sort of problem in the locker room. Like, all of this was kept so wildly quiet. To me, if you're the Raiders, you have to believe you have some standing to go down this road, because these people have seen enough football to know the uphill climb they have in front of them, haven't they?
Right. Well, there's a lot of ambiguity in what, you know, Josina, you know, puts on social media. Like, but I get it. Like, I understand this is, I think, the path as a team. If you feel like, hey, look, you know, arguing the medical part of this is not going to get us there in terms of being able to keep this money. we have to come up with something else here, or we have to plant our flag in something else to be able to make sure we don't lose this fight and we can continue to withhold the guaranteed money that's remaining. What are those incidents, right? So, I think it creates a perception here that, hey, it's not just about the medical. It's more. And again, I think that's something that's going to continue to leak out of the organization. It's difficult to just say, well, hey, maybe something else might have happened. You know, maybe something might have happened in the locker room. Maybe something might have happened between Wilkins and a teammate. I feel that feels a little loose at this point. And you know, until the Raiders can put a finer point on that, if that's where they're going, again, I think it's going to be ultimately an uphill climb, you know, for them. And in terms of, you know, setting precedent here, you know, I don't know, man. There's been so many grievances over the years. There have been so many, you know, contract disputes. I mean, you go back and you look at like Pete Carroll and Earl Thomas with the Seattle Seahawks. There were times where, you know, you wandered into the conduct detrimental, realm there between those two individuals. You wonder if this is sort of a pattern here with Pete and, you know, another player and, you know, that's a playbook that he's ultimately going to. But look, I will say this about the Raiders. Again, when this went down, when you talk to people in the organization, it wasn't so much about the money. It was really about the message. It was about, look, this is what we're about. If you're not going to be here, that's what, and I think whether they get the money back or not, that's going to continue to be the thing they underline. Like, if we need you here, we need you to be about football. If we feel like you're not here and you're not about playing football, clearly they didn't think Wilkins was. We're gonna go our separate ways, and that's just how it's gonna be.
And the funny thing about all this, and me and Fitz were texting about this, Christian Wilkins is like the last guy you would figure from this.
Right.
Like and who knows? We don't know everything about every guy, right? But Christian Wilkins was propped up as a great culture guy, good teammate. You know, no red flags off the field when he signed this $100 million deal.
Yeah, it's one of the few times, guys, that my phone has ever blown up with positives from y'all. Like, not from you guys specifically, but we all know I got enough friends that work around the league. Usually they mock me when the Raiders make a signing. Christian Wilkins was one of the few times that I got text after text of like, no, this is a home run. Like, congratulations. Your organization did something really smart here. And yet again, I can't have nice things. What about give me hope, C-Rob. Give me some reason. Can I start to just sit back, pop my feet up, and have nothing but endless hope about Ashton Jeanty yet?
I mean, Jeanty, there's no doubt. They're absolutely amped about Jeanty. And, you know, you get out there and you watch him and you see the contact balance and all the things that you saw in terms of his draft stock being where it was. You know, he really should factor into the passing game. I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities to catch balls out of the backfield as well. I think, you know, you wonder, let's see how the offensive line comes together. That surely is going to impact him. But one of the things I heard about Jeanty that was interesting while I was there was just his mentality as a football player. And, you know, John Spytek, who came in from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Raiders GM, you know, he's seen a lot of things through the years in the front office. And, you know, one player that I think Spytek really loved in Tampa Bay was Chris Godwin, because when they drafted Chris Godwin, he had everything worked out in terms of externally as a football player. He had everything worked out by the time he went to training camp. He had bought a house, taken care of his car insurance, learned the area. Hey, where am I going to get this? How do I, you know how to navigate, you know, the community I'm in, all these different things. Then he hit training camp. And once the regular season began, you know, Chris Godwin's rookie season, he was like a complete pro already. And from what I've heard, Jeanty's been the same way. Bought his house, like buttoned up everything he could possibly button up outside of, you know, what he has to do in the facility and on the football field, so that, you know, from an integration standpoint, once the regular season starts, he doesn't have to figure anything out. He gets out of camp, he's like a veteran. He's already part of the community. He already knows where he's living. He knows how to get back and forth from the facility. Just all the outside details, it sounds like Jeanty's already taken care of those. And I think it reminds that front office, particularly Spytek, of how Godwin handled himself. And that was like sort of a gold standard player in terms of coming into the league and being a pro, like right off, you know, from their first step. And so to compare, I think Jeanty to Godwin from that standpoint is definitely a positive for the Raiders. You know, in terms of the rest of the team, it'll be interesting to see how the offense develops. I'll tell you this, Brock Bowers might, I don't know what the record is for touches for a tight end, be it, you know, running the ball, catching the ball. Bowers might break it. You know, you watch them from an offensive standpoint, and, you know, Jacoby Myers, I think, clearly fits with Geno Smith. There's no question about that. I think there's a lot of other chemistry that needs to be worked out. But just watching what Chip Kelly's doing with Brock Bowers, he's going to line up everywhere. They're going to run reverses. I wouldn't be surprised if he lines up in the backfield. He lines up in line, in the slot, outside. That was like the one guy in practice I'm like, oh my God, like he is going to get a ton of touches this season as long as he holds up and is healthy. So if you have an opportunity, if you're in fantasy football and you can get Brock Bowers, do not hesitate.
I am overjoyed right now. This might be my favorite segment we've ever done on Inside Coverage. I will say this though, see Rob, when you mentioned Brock and you mentioned what makes Ashton tick, I do think that we always talk about how do you change culture within an organization. And full transparency, we were talking as we connected today. As a Raiders fan, and I know, you know, people within the organization that will roll their eyes to the fact that yet again another coaching regime is coming in, and yet again another coaching regime is saying all the right things. I don't know, the more I just think about it, if coaches alone can really do anything other than ensure that they bring in people that actually change the culture. And that's what I think when you have a particular – in Vegas particularly, I think you need a particular type of – business first, going to get the job done. Like, it takes a certain hard hat mentality to avoid everything else. Because I, as somebody that grew up there, I've always said Las Vegas will find your weakness and it will exploit your weakness. And certainly when I was 22 years old, if you'd have handed me $30 million and said, go live in Vegas, that wouldn't have worked out well for me. So I think it takes a special type of professional to go in and really be part of something. And those are the keys that long-term, maybe this year the Raiders aren't, a massive step forward. They're not winning 10 games, obviously. But these are the building blocks that can help them get there.
Yeah, and I, you know, maybe that is part of why, you know, you see the front office being so excited about how Genty handles himself outside the building. Because when you're in Vegas, there's a lot outside the building. It's not like a lot of other communities. Certainly not like Tampa. You know, I think there's more to do in Las Vegas than there is in Tampa. But, you know, one other thing I'll say, too, is you kind of – go through the organization and, you know, you're like, all right, let me find out some more about John Spytek and really what he's like. It's not hard to see why Tom Brady, who obviously is a minority owner there and overlapped in terms of the Michigan experience with John Spytek, it's not hard to see why Brady has a connection with Spytek that matters, because I think they're very, very similar. From every indication I got from Spytek, he is – for better or worse, I mean, however you feel about it, I would not say he is a new age GM from the standpoint of like, let me know all your feelings. Let me know, you know, hey, what, you know, let's talk about all these other things that you have outside. Like, he's about football. He's like, we want you here. We want you in the building. We want you worrying about football. We want you playing about football. We want football to be your number one priority in life. So when you hear players who come out and say, and it does happen, including with some highly drafted players in the past several years, you've heard players come out and say that football is not necessarily the be-all, end-all in their lives. I don't think Spytek's that kind of guy. He's not about that. And guess who else is not about that? Tom Brady is not about that. He's like, you're going to be a professional football player? You're going to be a professional football. That is your avocation in life. I think Tom has illustrated it. We've seen things happen in Tom's life that have indicated, and we've read books that have indicated that Tom cared about football more than almost anything else, maybe other than his children. And I think Spytek fits kind of that mold. And to me, that is why he ended up, you know, being the general manager of the Raiders.
All right. So we have a better sense right now of where the Raiders are. You've also been in Arizona, and Frank and I have laughed a little bit about the Cardinals over the course of this offseason, because I feel like Arizona is just sort of forgotten. I just don't feel like anybody's really talking about them one way or the other. So what did you walk away from Glendale thinking of expectations for this Cardinals team?
It's funny too that Arizona's forgotten, because, you know, had they not finished 2-5 last year, I mean, people forget that, you know, through the first 10 games of the season, I think they were 6-4, and they were actually way above people's expectations, and they were a team that, you know, was staring at you know, pressing for a playoff run. And then they go 2-5 in the final, you know, seven games. And obviously they, you know, they lose some really disappointing games in that stretch. I think they lost four division games in that final seven games. And, you know, they bottom out still, though. I think what I believe 8-9 was still above expectations for where the Cardinals were last season. What I think is interesting when you look at the Cardinals, though, is I went in here 3 years ago, you know, met with Jonathan Gannon, the head coach, met with general manager Monty Austin Fort, and they were like, look, here's how we're going to build the team. We're going to cut, we're going to get rid of a lot of guys. Okay. Right now we're going to slash some guys who've been paid. We're going to slash some guys who have been high picks here because they're not about our culture. They're not about where we want to go with this. There's going to be a very specific way we want to build and a very specific type of football player we want to build with. And it was very much a, we're going to build this team through the draft. We're going to take, you know, we'll take our shots in free agency, but they're going to be very targeted in terms of the money. We're not going to strap ourselves to long-term money that's going to hurt us. I come in 3 years later after hearing that, and I start to look at things. And I go, okay, let me look at the dead money situation. Man, they're like 30th in the league in dead money. There's almost no dead money for the Cardinals. I'm like, let me look at their cap situation. They're in a great situation. They have money to roll over into 2026 if they don't extend some guys in 2025. So they're in great shape from a salary cap standpoint. And then when you look at the actual roster itself, it's laced up and down with players that they've drafted, players that they've brought in, you know, some very economic free agent signings. They haven't strapped themselves to a massive amount of money other than Kyler Murray, which again was not their, you know, that's not this regime's ultimate decision. They came in and are taking over for that money. And so I think it is low key, like the Cardinals should, given what their base of talent is, if everyone's healthy, particularly along the defensive line, they should be a team that can potentially push for, let's say, I don't know, 10-7 season, which might be able to get you into the playoffs.
That's a huge season for the Cardinals.
It is. Yeah, it would be. And, you know, but look, the things that could potentially hold them back, there's questions along the offensive line, like almost every other team in the league. I think when you get beyond Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey McBride, there's, you know, okay, who's our next pass receiver here? People point at Michael Wilson. Michael Wilson might be a 2B, a 3A. They need, I think they still want a very impactful number two wideout. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's something they continue to look for moving forward. And then it's Kyler. And
that's
Kyler
where Murray, it is. I was wondering if you're going to get to that. Right. Because what's the ceiling with Kyler Murray at this point? Like, it's at some point, it's like, I think we've seen Kyler Murray. I just don't think there's another level here, do you? Like, I kind of wonder about that.
Every season, off season, I've come in here for three straight years. It's been like a referendum year for Kyler Murray. It's like, okay, this is the year where, but I really, truly believe we're there now, because what they have now done, this regime has said, okay, we're going to get him better in really two distinct ways. We're going to improve the talent around him, give him the best possible offensive teammates as a unit to play with. Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, I think he's up to like 220. He's gained weight. Like he looks thicker, looks stronger, but again, he hasn't gotten any faster, right? Like he's going to be, as a route tactician, that's really how Marvin Harrison Jr. needs to get better as he moves forward. But I think they're confident in him taking another step as their number one wideout. Trey McBride has the ability to be one of the, you know, elite tight ends. He showed it last season. He can be there with Kelce, Kittle, Bowers. Like he's in that group. From a pass catching standpoint, they're going to run the ball a heck of a lot with James Conner and Trey Benson. But they've augmented the offense a little bit for Kyler too, in that they're like, okay, if the offensive line isn't perfect, we're going to move the pocket more. We're going to try and roll out, you know, Kyler at times. We're going to give him an opportunity to make plays, not necessarily inside the box. You know, there's, I think again, the running component of Kyler's game is going to be accentuated. So, is it a referendum season for Kyler? Yeah, I think it is, because they're like, look, we're improving the pieces around you. Now we need you to make the decisions, given some tweaking of the offense. We need you to make the right decisions downfield. And Jonathan Gannon said to me, he made a golf analogy. He's like, look, it's just, we're giving him the whole bag of clubs. We just need him to choose the right club for the right situation when he's making throws and decisions. That's ultimately going to determine, you know, whether or not this is a make or break season.
Right. And I mean, it, cynically, I already think we've had the referendum season on Kyler Murray. I think this is who he is. Like, if he shows another level, I'll reevaluate. But at this point, we're this is his seventh season already.
Seventh season. He's
entering crazy.
Seventh
it doesn't season. Seem like it, but there's just not been a lot there. And I get it. He tore his ACL and that set him back. And he hasn't had the best teammates.
It's been a lot of injuries.
The coaching stuff and blah, blah, blah. So, maybe, but I just feel like, and you kind of alluded to this, Charles, of like, we kind of hear this every year at this time, like, oh, right. This is what we're doing for Kyler. This is why he's going to have a breakout. And by your seventh season, kind of are who you are. That's my opinion. We'll see.
I think that what keeps them coming back too, and what I think, you know, let's say Kyler Murray even had a slightly above average season this year, and he was made available next offseason. I think teams would be interested. And I think what keeps people coming back on Kyler Murray is, go back and look at the Rams game last season. I think it was, you know, early on in the season, and then the 49ers game to wrap the season, albeit against the 49ers team that didn't have a lot to play for, nothing to play for really at that point.
And they're beat up too. Yeah.
His highs are in, I mean, his good games you know, you watch the Rams game and you're sitting there and you're watching him and you're saying this, he is elite. This is like a top 3-4 type of game in football right now when he puts it all together. Now, you know, the Rams didn't have their full complement of players. It wasn't the Rams team at the beginning of the season that it necessarily was at the end of the season. But again, it's just that his highs, his ceiling is so crazy and so much fulfilling of why he became the number one pick in the draft. The problem is his lows are still way too low. And when you talk to people in the organization, what they tell you is our biggest thing is that can we raise the floor on him? Can we raise those lows to adequate? If they're like, if we can just raise those lows to adequate and then pair them with the games where he has those highs, he will climb up that board of, you know, when you're ranking your quarterbacks in the league and is more of a top 10 guy than maybe a top 15, 16 guy. And I think they think if we can get him to being a top 10 guy, Jalen Hurts, in some circles, arguably a top 10 guy, right? And you had to build a lot of things around him in terms of the Eagles to, you know, turn him into, I think, the Super Bowl winning quarterback that he was, having the running game, having the defense the way that it was, having that offensive line. I mean, Jalen Hurts has a wealth of things around him that have helped him, you know, really achieve that lofty status. I think the Cardinals are looking at that as a similar situation to Kyler Murray.
It's tough for me because I say all the time, context matters when we see performance from players. So coaching injuries, all of those things matter until at some point, to Frank's point, it doesn't. At some point, it's just like, this is who you are and this is what your situation is. And, you know, I hate the phrase injury prone because I don't really think somebody is injury prone, but sometimes bad things just continually happen to certain players. Sometimes the situation just is what it is. Like, I think there's important context to why we are sort of sitting here with Kyler saying, and that's fair. I just don't know that he ever breaks out of that context to me. Like, it's just going to be continually some level of it. That being said, it's still better than taking a stab at the apple in the draft, which might not help anybody either way.
Well, Fitz, and here's the thing too. I think you could argue that they've already left quarterbacks on the board. When you go back and you look, particularly when, you know, you look back at the 2004 draft, right? Or 2024 draft, the multitude of quarterbacks that got drafted in 2024, you could have left a good quarterback on the board in 2024 when you ultimately stuck with Kyler Murray. You could make the argument at that time for passing, right? But now we're getting to the point where, as Frank said, we're in year seven. You kind of are what you are in year seven. And if he shows in year seven that he is what he is, if he just sort of replicates the Kyler Murray experience we've seen in the past, I don't know that you can necessarily pass on a quarterback in the 2026 NFL draft. And that's a point that I made, you know, to someone in the front office. I said, look, you know, every year is a referendum year for Kyler. The difference is this is year seven. It's another referendum year. And you have another draft that potentially could have 4, 5, maybe 6 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, depending on how the college football season plays out. I don't know that you can once again pass yet again on a number of quarterbacks, and that's going to be pressed against how Kyler performs this season. Everyone's going to be talking about those quarterbacks that could be first round picks in 2026.
I think the problem with that, though, is Arizona's not going to be bad enough to get one of those quarterbacks. They're going to be pretty good. Like I when I was doing the Cardinals preview, I was like, there's a lot to like about this team. We kind of forget because of the way they finished, right? Like they finished poorly, but then you look back and you're like, well, this team doubled its win total from the year before. And why can't they be? I mean, even if you proved to 9 wins, okay, with Kyler being the 16th best quarterback in the NFL, you're not drafting a guy there. You're not going to draft your save. They're stuck. They're a little stuck that way. And I worry about that with them, that they just get stuck in the worst place to be in the NFL. I've said this a lot often, is right in the middle of quarterback. If you bat a quarterback, you just move on. Who cares? Whatever. We're going to be drafting fifth in a draft, and we'll draft whoever, you know, whatever quarterback flavor of the month in the draft. If you're really good at quarterback, you pay that guy and you're happy. If you're in the middle, you just talk yourself into it year after year after year because you can't draft anybody better. And here's a guy who's at least okay. And maybe if we pull off a Philadelphia Eagles and we draft like Howie Roseman, we can make him Jalen Hurts. Like, I guess, like, it doesn't happen too often. So I just worry for the Cardinals that they're just kind of going to be stuck in this, like, we're not really contenders, but we're not bad enough to tank. We're not going to get a quarterback. We got Kyler. That's a bad place to be in the NFL sometimes.
Yeah, frankly, nobody was worse for a period than the Bears, and they were supposed to have gotten their quarterback that turned it all around, but camp hasn't started so well. We'll get into that. Some big news across the league. We'll break it down for you after we take a little break. Welcome back. We're getting caught up on training camp news all across the board. And I talked a little bit about this on a radio show last week, but guys, let's acknowledge something here. Less is more sometimes in information. Like, I laugh about the fact that when I was a little kid and I wanted to get the Raiders score, I had to dial up the George Michael sports machine late at night and call it. Like, I had to wait for a broadcast to give me a highlight, to run to the corner store on Fridays and Mondays to get the USA Today because there might be a picture of Bo Jackson in there. Like, that's the world I grew up in. And I've often laughed about the fact that now we know not only practice squad guys, but we know guys that aren't having a good practice along the way. And everybody gets super worked up about it. And J.J. Watt tweeted out the other day, he's like, I thought this was sort of a myth, but it turns out people are really stat tracking practice, and you can't do that because you don't know the situations. There's so much nuance to it. So I acknowledge all those things while also acknowledging that the video footage coming out every single day out of Bears camp seems to be focused on the fact that Caleb Williams is not good. And Alyssa Barbieri of Bears Wire, to quote, this is her tweet, the first day was littered with pre-snap issues, including the offense lining up incorrectly consecutive times during 7-on-7, which prompted head coach Ben Johnson to yell, you're out, and pull them out of the drill. The second day featured issues with false starts and botched snaps, with the third day featured back-to-back interceptions by Caleb Williams and defense bringing the pressure. Everybody's freaking out. I don't know, C-Rob. Ben Johnson came out and said, hey, we're rebuilding this whole thing from scratch, right? Like, everything he knew last year doesn't matter. We're rebuilding it. How patient should everybody be looking at Bears camp when you see this? I mean, you're the one that's out at all these training camps. Like, should we be freaking out about quarterbacks playing like dog poop in the middle of training camp?
Well, first off, like, I remember J.J. Watt being on the Houston Texans roster when people were counting Brock Osweiler interceptions in training camp, and Bill O'Brien was freaking out on reporters, like lighting up reporters about counting interceptions in practice, like just went off, right? About how stupid it was. You know, this is the time to make mistakes, and, you know, this is meaningless right now, and you're killing this kid. He's not going to have an opportunity to succeed. You're already undercutting him. And then Brock Osweiler was what he was when the regular season rolled out, and J.J. Watt was on that roster. So it's not the first time people have counted, things that are going on in training camp. That's been going on for a long time now. You know, I'd argue, look, the last 20 years, if not longer, we've paid a lot of attention to how people are performing in training camp. That said, I do get it. Like, this whole idea of like counting completions versus incompletions. But one thing that I do think is translatable is, can you run the offense? Can you run it with speed? Can you spit out a play in the huddle? Are you taking too long? Like, the coaches, what they prize right now, before I think you even get into the completions or incompletions or decisions you make, can you break the huddle in time to get a playoff? Can you get guys in the right play at the snap? You have to have the fundamental foundation down first. And if you don't, that's going to be a problem. And I remember, watching Sean Payton go through that, with Russell Wilson, coming through Broncos camp and, you know, him being frustrated at times, like Bo Nix being a rookie and needing to get some of those staple things down early on in training camp. Can it be overcome? Yeah, absolutely. And I would remind people, what was Jared Goff's record his first 11 games under Ben Johnson in Detroit?
Right.
He was 0-10-1. Okay. Like, it didn't get off to a great start with Jared Goff in Detroit. And then when it rounded the corner in a really big way. I would say that Johnson runs, you know, a complicated offense. There's a lot of stuff that goes into this. There are a lot of different looks. There's a lot of different variations. You know, Caleb Williams is probably going to be swimming a little bit, and that's just what you're going to have to deal with right now. Do I think it's reason for people to absolutely panic and go, Caleb's a bust? You know, the worst version of him that we saw in 2024 is really ultimately what he's going to be. I don't think we're there yet, you know, but if this is something that continues on late into training camp, I would say, do you feel like maybe it's going to be a little bit more of a roller coaster at the beginning for the Bears than maybe we initially thought? Sure, I can get with that. But Frank, you and I have seen over the years, we've seen players with roller coaster beginnings and it flattens out and it turns a corner. And I would even argue, and I would ask you this, don't you think that's what you're going to get from Ben Johnson? You're going to get Caleb Williams is going to get pressed by a guy who expects perfection on an offense and just came from a situation in Detroit where he had a high-level veteran who could run everything he wanted. He could be asked to run different looks. And, you know, Jared Goff is deep into his career as a veteran and could handle everything thrown at him. This is now the transition where Ben Johnson's dealing with a second-year player, and it might not be the case.
Yeah, talk about pushing him hard. I mean, this was Mr. Nobody Watched Film with me last year. Like, you're not going to have that this year. You're going to have a guy on your behind. Real quick, I do want to point this out. The Bo Nix Broncos thing, and one of the drum beats for Broncos camp has been Bo Nix is getting the plays out so quick now. He just knows this offense. Like, it is second nature to him, and sometimes that takes a year, whether you're a rookie or not. And there's 90% of me is like, this is camp nonsense. Defenses are ahead of the offense early on. But yes, when you're having kind of functional things, like you're having false starts and you're not getting the plays out quickly enough and all the pre-snap stuff, that's a little concerning. The 10% part that concerns me is we saw flaws in Caleb Williams' game last year. And I don't want to, like, I'm not sitting here saying that that's going to continue because I think Caleb Williams could be really, really good at Ben Johnson. But there is that little part of me saying maybe just these flaws are too much. Like, maybe the fact that he holds the ball too long and all this kind of stuff is a little bit too much to overcome. It's still 90% saying I think this is going to work. But to your point, maybe they do have a slow start to the season. But the problem with that is if you have a slow start to the season in the NFC North in 2025, you're buried. Like, this is the best division of football. So I worry about that for the Bears. Then we're going to freak out because, again, we don't give anybody patience anymore. And if they're 1-4 coming out of the gates, we're going to be like, oh my God, Caleb's a bust. Ben Johnson's not a great head coach and all this stuff. Where, to your point, maybe it just in mid-October, all of a sudden we look up and we're like late October, early November. We're like, wow, Caleb Williams had 345 yards and 3 touchdowns in that game. This thing is kind of coming together. It could be that kind of a season for the Bears.
I would urge a little bit of patience here because, look, I get it. Everyone there is so excited about Ben Johnson coming in. You go through the quarterback series. I think he looked good in the quarterback series as well. And look, let's be honest. It's not like Ben Johnson has spent a lot of time leading into this Bears season downplaying where he thinks they can go. I mean, he's done nothing but, I think, hype up Bears fans along the way. But again, I think we were always kidding ourselves if there was this idea that there was not going to be an adjustment period. And I even said before the Bears hired him, I said part of what would worry me if you're the Chicago Bears when it comes to Ben Johnson is he's dealing with a quarterback who does not screw around and waste time not making decisions. Like Jared Goff very much in that Detroit system is like, okay, this is what I got to do. You know, I got 3 options here. Boom, boom, boom. Ball snap. I'm getting the ball out. Like, this is where I'm going. And you know, I'm not screwing around trying to make a big play downfield. I'm not, you know, does he do that occasionally? Sure. But the vast majority of the time, is Jared Goff just operating what's given to him and taking the options that are on the table? Yes, very much so. And Caleb Williams, not that kind of player coming out of USC. And we saw it at times with the Bears. You know, you hold on to the ball. You want to make big plays. You're going to improvise. You're going to play outside of structure. can that get worked out of him? And that was, frankly, before Ben Johnson's, you know, ended up being their head coach. That was the, to me, the concern is that you're like, these are not really similar types of quarterbacks. Granted, one is young and one is much older, but Jared Goff also came into league very much being like, came out of Sonny Dykes' offense, where it's like, what I was told was he ran seven plays in college. And it was like, hey, it's this, this, or this. Like, you're going to go out, you're going to make that decision, and we're going to move on. So, you know, I do. I think there's just a little bit of meshing those worlds for Ben Johnson. But again, I would not panic right now if you're the Bears. We're early in camp. Yeah. Pads aren't on in most places right now. Well, just and relax.
See, Rob, the other two things I would add to that. One, I'd stuck in my head watching quarterback, which was great this year, as always. But watching Kirk Cousins, who's been in the league for 13 years, as they told us multiple times, struggle in the beginning of camp because he was just trying to get guys moving the right way.
Like the motion. Motion. He didn't like motion.
He kept saying, he's like, man, this is just so much, so much. And I think about, well, that's for somebody that's been in the league for 13 years that speaks these languages fluently. And then the other part of it is even talking to my buddy that covers the Titans. He was talking about how Titans fans are struggling right now to, like, they want to make a big deal out of everything. Well, situations matter in practice. Like, are they running third and longs, right? Because if they're if the whole set that they're running in practice is third and 20s and Caleb throws some picks, that's way different than if the whole set is first and 10. And first and 10 could be from the 25. It could be from the 45. It can be from the red zone. Like, there's just so many different portions to this. We are seeing this much. And I would beg anybody, if you walked into a physics class and you saw this much, I don't think you really understand what the entire project is. You got to trust your coaching staff to see the entire puzzle for more than just these little social media highlights that are coming out.
Yeah. I mean, it's we've become very reactive in camp. People have brought up the Jamar Chase camp again, and, you know, we'll never forget that one, right? Jamar Chase, all of a sudden, you know, it was the stripes on the ball. He can't catch anything. This is the massive. Yeah. Remember, he couldn't catch. Yeah. He just kept dropping things in camp.
The stripes on the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he had like four or five drops. And then it was like, oh my God, this guy, it turns out he's just a bust. You know, they made the wrong pick. It's the Bengals. And, you know, so look, we get way over our skis with assessments, and everybody relax. It's going to be, you know, a transition period. Maybe the Bears aren't going to be, you know, a playoff team in the NFC North this season. Are you really going to care? I mean, I'll tell you what, the Lions, looking back, have forgotten the 0-10-1 start with Jared Goff, right? Mm-hmm. They've been like, oh, that's right. Yeah. We almost fired Dan Campbell.
Oh,
like,
Dan was on a hot seat. Yeah.
It was like, so people forget about that. You know, all that really matters is the long run here. And I would say, again, you know, invoking the quarterback series, Ben Johnson had so much belief in Jared Goff, and they were so settled and worked out, and they were, the seams were so well hidden, that in that stumble bumble play, he actually asked Jared Goff if he could drop the football on the ground to simulate a fumble. I've never heard of that in my life, a coach saying to a quarterback, could you fake fumble it and actually drop the ball on the ground? Like, I'm like, wow, they were really comfortable together. I mean, even Jared Goff's like, you want me to drop the ball on the ground? Like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
That made my heart just skip a beat anyway. I did think it was of note, too, when Jared said, hey, a great offensive play caller, you know what's coming. You know what they're going to call. And I was thinking about that with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams. Like, they together have to grow to the point that Caleb Williams knows what he's going to call. It's process. So if I can't freak out about that, can I freak out about Terry McLaurin returning but holding in possibly? Like, look, 4-day holdout cost him $200,000. He comes to camp, and then it's like, I came to camp, got a little ankle issue, not going to run. Immediately, everybody screams, hold in. Can I freak out about that, C-Rob?
Let me freak out about something. You get back in the building because, look, if you're losing money, right, your agent is like, hey, man, there's a way to do this without losing money. You go in and you have, hey, your back's feeling a little achy. It's an ankle. It's, you know, my knee is a little bulky right now. I've got some swelling. Like, you come up with any reason ultimately to not get on the field. I think the good thing is he's in the building, right? He's around his teammates. I think you have an organization that does want to do a deal with Terry McLaurin. I think the feelings that help to get a deal done are much easier to embrace when you have a guy who's in the building. And by the way, you can talk to, you see him, to him when he's in the building. Yeah. When he's not in the building, all it takes is agent doesn't pick up the phone. He doesn't pick up the phone. They're ignoring it. The guy says, you know what? I'm so pissed off about this. I'm going to go to Cabo for a week, you know, because I just want to clear my mind. He's not doing any of that. He's there. And that, you know, that matters. And by the way, he's not out on the field, but he is in the classroom, right? And being in the classroom also matters. So I think there, in terms of getting a deal done, it's better for a guy to be in the building than not in the building. And so far, I think everything that Washington has said has led me to believe that they're going to get a deal done here. But, you know, when wide receiver money creeps into the $25 million, $30 million range, which is where any number one wide receiver worth his salt, particularly a young quarterback, wants to be, these deals are not going to be as easy to get done as people necessarily think. Look, Justin Jefferson, even that deal now, I can tell you, I'm not going to say which team it is, but I've been through five you know, training camps so far, and I had a very specific conversation about wide receiver money with one general manager, and he just straight up said, like, the Justin Jefferson deal is just undoable. Like, it's just, even now, it's one of these deals where it's like, what do we, like, it can cripple your franchise. We're never going to do a deal anywhere approaching that, you know, for a wide receiver. Yeah, I still think there are teams right now that are like paying a wide receiver $30+ million is, as this general manager said to me, he touches the ball maybe 8 times a game. Like, wow. I can't pay a guy $30 million on offense who touches the ball 8 times. I just won't allow myself.
That's why that's the same line of thinking that led the Tennessee Titans to trade AJ Brown, though. I mean, like, this is the market. But I mean, specifically,
hey, John Robinson did a really nice job filling in on Good Morning Football. I'm sorry, I'm just throwing shade. Go ahead, Frank.
The McLaurin thing, yeah, I assume it'll get done. But it's one of those things I always say, like, until it is done and all of a sudden now we get into August and we get into the first preseason week and a second preseason week and it's not done, then you start to worry. Look, Terry McLaurin is a dude the Commanders, a fairly new regime there, should want to pay and put him out in front of everybody and say, look, this guy was a soldier for us when we were terrible. We want to reward him. This is what happens when you do your job and you're a consummate professional like Terry McLaurin. You will get rewarded by this regime.
Let me throw one thing at you, though.
Sure.
Adam Peters, the general manager there, was in the 49ers organization, right? Brandon Ayuk went through. Now Peters was not there for this, but it happened, right? And Peters has institutional knowledge of the 49ers organization. Brandon Ayuk went through a Holden, right? Did the whole, hey, I'm going to be here, but I'm not going to be, you know, out on the field. Maybe I'll take a walk around practice at times and make it a little spicy for the beat writers and the national writers who are coming through. Ultimately, what happened? The 49ers did their deal with Ayuk going into camp after shopping him around and you know, potentially looking at trading him to like Pittsburgh, New England, maybe Cleveland. The deal got done. Fine. Everybody's happy. And now you're kind of like, are the 49ers really that happy with this deal? Are they really happy that they did a Brandon Ayuk deal?
Nope.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of like, hey, is Brandon Ayuk available?
Right.
You know, are the 49ers going to stick with this guy long term? You went out and drafted Ricky Pearsall. You got Juwan Jennings. You have, you know, some other players here who ultimately you have to pay. You know, got the Brock Purdy deal done. So that's just to say, like, remember, Peters has institutional knowledge of being inside the 49ers. He knows Kyle Shanahan. He knows the front office there. He knows there was a reticence there on that, you know, behalf of that front office to pay that much money for Brandon Ayuk. And I'm sure he knows that there's maybe a little bit of buyer's remorse here. Maybe that plays into Peters' mind where he's like, I don't want to have buyer's remorse here and just roll out a $30 million a year contract.
I'm also looking at, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about the future quarterback in the NFL draft. When you look at some of the young wide receivers that are in college football right now, you can't tell me that it doesn't make sense at some point. I mean, I'll be talking to Jeremiah Smith today for Yahoo Sports, right? Like a lot of these young guys, they fall in love with.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's I get the wide receiver thing, but Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams, and that 2027 class looks like super bumper.
It's less about those two particulars and more about it. You want to, like, wins above replacement. If we're going to have that conversation about running backs, particularly, do you ever, you know, do you pay one because you can draft one? I just have to wonder for the top top of the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, they'll get their $30 million a year. For everybody else, you're really going to sit there and say, well, would I rather pay this guy $22 million or would I rather just go take a stab at the next rookie phenom at the wide receiver position? It's just, to me, it's going to become a replaceable position at some point because of the good play, the quality play that's coming out of college. All right, speaking of getting paid, Rashawn Slater got a massive, massive contract. What's it mean for the Chargers? Plus, are the Cowboys ever going to sign Micah? We got some more news to get into. We'll do it next after a quick break. Welcome back. Chargers have extended Rashawn Slater 4 years, $114 million. Highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history. C-Rob, you were at Chargers camp last week. How do you feel about the LA Chargers right now?
Yeah, I mean, there was no doubt this was going to get done, right? I mean, this guy, if it didn't get done, he was getting franchised. So you're going to pay that kind of money at this stage anyway. He's your anchor left tackle. They've got Joe Alt ultimately on the right side. When you go through Chargers camp, whatever questions they have about the offensive line, and they do exist, like their left guard center position right now, they're sorting that out. You're hoping Mekhi Becton at right guard is the Philadelphia Eagles Mekhi Becton that you're signing. The one thing they don't worry about is they sit there and go, we probably have two all-pro tackles. We have an all-pro left tackle. We have an all-pro right tackle. And by the way, our all-pro right tackle and Joe Alt can also play left tackle for us as well, if that's ever needed. So those are the two guys that absolutely are going to make their money. To me, very similar to, like, you look at the Detroit Lions, like Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker have gotten paid out the wazoo over the course of their career when it's come to the Detroit Lions. Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater are going to be the always paid tackles for the Chargers, and they'll sort out how to massage the rest of the money on that offensive line. But there's no question Slater was getting paid. He's all pro level talent at left
tackle. We can argue about whether you pay this position, that position. You pay offensive linemen. If you have a great offensive tackle,
tackles.
You go ahead and pay those guys. No question.
Pay the fat guys is always going to be a theme on this show.
That's why do we keep calling them fat guys? Have you seen these guys? Tackles don't
they're look huge.
Look,
they're
listen,
huge.
Tyron Smith had a six pack.
Right.
Okay. Like he was like a, you know, you're talking about like a 6'6", 6'7" offensive tackle who, you know, what was Tyron Smith? 320 with a six pack. Like, you're like, come on, man. These are not
first, the first time I was around a guy like that was Ryan Clady back in the, you remember Ryan Clady with the Broncos, the first round pick out of Boise State. I was like, this dude doesn't have like an ounce of fat on his body. He's just
not like
massive.
That
He's just massive.
It is
astounding to post playing career. They either end up like Joe Thomas or
jacked.
Like what? They right. like they either end up jacked or they end up, you know, maybe letting themselves go a little bit. I won't throw my buddy under the bus that's let himself go. The Cowboys extend Jake Ferguson 4 years, $52 million. Highest paid tight end in Cowboys history. I'm sure Cowboys fans can now stop obsessing over Micah Parsons. I kid. C-Rob, does this mean anything?
Well, yeah, of course it means. Like, anytime there's an extension done at this point for the Cowboys, you're like, wait, what? Who did they extend? They extended the tight end? They didn't get the edge? The edge rusher done? Yeah, I mean, it's what's going on with Micah right now. It's crossed into that territory where you're like, is it going to get messy? You know, and in a way it has, because you had other players have to chime in on it. I thought it was hilarious that Dak Prescott was basically like, this is who we are. This is what we do. It's just like, this is when it comes to contracts,
right.
Like we're just this team when it comes to contracts. It's always going to be like this. But, you know, look, when you have CD, you know, sounding off, when you have Dak sounding off, you have other ex-Cowboys players sounding off who had to go through their deals with Jerry. Signing someone else in the midst of that, absolutely, I think adds a little bit of fuel to the fire, particularly when it's a tight end who's been okay. You know, he's, you know, not a Pro Bowl level player, really. I think consistently, I think he was a Pro Bowl alternate 1 year. It's okay. It's not the signing everyone's looking for, and it's not the signing that's really going to define the preseason for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I was like, Jake Ferguson, good for him to get the deal on Wisconsin and all that. But like, it's
on
like, it's like, I guess, like, fine. But yes, Micah's going to get paid. We all know he is. We all know that Jerry's just giving us content for August, right? Like, that's all we're doing. We've dealt with this so many times over the years.
Do either of you, Frank, do you believe that there's a real chance that Micah Parsons is not a Dallas Cowboys in a year?
No.
C-Rob?
No.
Okay. There we go. All right. We're all in agreement on it. Go all the way across the board. It's wild. It's chaotic. C-Rob, where are you headed next? Where everybody, by the way, you should be checking out the Yahoo Sports app to see everything that C-Rob is writing as he goes on his training camp tour. So is Jory. They're both doing great work getting out and just getting in the thick of it. Where are you headed next, C-Rob?
Niners, Broncos, I believe. Vikings, little, you know, it's in flux. We're kind of building the railroad as I go.
That is amazing. It should be noted, as we will continually note on this show, Frank and I openly pleaded to get the Raiders assignment. We thought we could handle that training camp in Vegas for a few days. Somehow they decided not to send us. We weren't allowed to go to the casinos and expense, you know, shot and a drink. But
okay, wait. Okay, listen. I never got within 20 minutes of downtown Las Vegas.
That's a
I was
shame.
In Henderson,
shame.
Nevada.
Okay. I love Henderson. Henderson's okay. A great suburb.
Yeah. I was staying in a Green Pen Marriott property, okay? Not a Red Pen for those who travel a lot. You know the difference between the Red Pen properties and the Green Pen properties. One is a lot cheaper.
That's how I know you're a Marriott nerd. Yeah, that's how I know you're a Marriott nerd. I mean, my goodness.
So all I heard is that you don't know how to have the same level of good time Frank and I would have. I'm just,
Saturday or whatever.
Where there's a will, there's a way, all right? We only asked for one camp assignment, so we don't have to worry about sleep. That's a, you know, maybe next year we'll keep fighting the good fight. Follow us on social media at Yahoo Schwab, at Charles Robinson. I'm at Jason Fitz. If you've listened this far, rate, review, subscribe. Give us the 5-star. If it's anything less than a 5-star, then we don't want your review. But give us the 5-star, rate, review. Tell everybody to check the show out. We appreciate you guys. Come back next week. More training camp news that you need to know will come at you then. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Wow.